Okay, the 8th, we're going to try to do a breakfast, which I haven't even started to promote yet. And it's not going to be one of the big ones like we do in there. It's just something small, informal here. If you want to invite somebody, please feel free to. It's just sort of a recapture some momentum sort of thing. And then we haven't put a lot of the pieces in place for it yet, but September the 18th is kind of like a fall kickoff evening that we're going to do. Fall series that we're planning, and this is actually, I should probably say this, this material right here is intended to be equipping some of us with the skills that will be helpful for group leaders for the fall thing. The fall series is going to be What Every Father Needs to Know, which is not a really catchy title. It doesn't sound real exciting, and I kind of like hope that I was going to come up with a better title, but I haven't yet. And it pretty much sums up what it's about. But anyway, the principles behind that, I should probably tell you that, is that a father can be well into his 40s or his 50s before he starts to realize all the things that he doesn't know, that he wasn't aware of, that nobody ever sat down and explained to him clearly and in detail. And by that time, a lot of his children are well past that age where they're going to be easily and readily influenced, where he has a lot of in-home influence over them. So rather than have men and then their kids discover by accident what they didn't know, why not start by, and this was the idea, why not begin a series where we'll unpack for guys some of the big ideas that every adult should understand. So we'll talk about the value of work, why work matters. Not just get a job, but why work matters. We'll talk about managing your finances, because there's a lot of people that are great at making money, but then they don't know what to do with the money afterwards. We'll talk about, and those are two separate issues. People lump them together, but they're not. You can be outstanding at generating income and very poor at managing the income that you get. Another one of the things is understanding how to build lasting friendships, lasting relationships. Here's another one. What to look for in a mate? How do I select someone who's going to be my life partner? And a lot of people have, next to no guidance as to what to do in that. And what we're going to look at today, and let me pause and I'll share with you what we're going to look at today, is that there's a variety of sources of wisdom out there. So when you and I evaluate the things that we're going to call wise, the things that we're going to build our life on, there's already hundreds, if not thousands, of voices out there speaking all different types of what they claim to be wisdom. So how do you and I discern one type of wisdom for another? How do we discern what really is wisdom from everything that's, we'll call it, counterfeit wisdom? And we'll get into that in a moment. Well, in keeping with what we're talking about with What Every Father Needs to Know, it's amazing the amount of information that is now out there, given the shift in our culture, as to how many years you live with someone, what are the ways in which you develop the relationship while you're living with someone, and explore whether they're right for you and whether you should ultimately get married. Now, isn't that a very different set of assumptions about the way you explore marriage from what it would have been 50 or 100 years ago? It's extremely different, and yet, here's what I'm discovering more and more. This is the dominant voice out there in culture.
Is it convenient for me?
So if we don't have...
Those couples don't get married once they do that. The statistics show that.
But the point is, if we don't, as fathers, as men, have a better explanation, have a clearer explanation, then the voice of the culture is simply going to be more alluring, more attractive, more sensible. So how do we communicate these things to our kids? We're going to look at, in part number one, which will be a 6-week series that we're going to do church-wide, we're going to look at the first, what I believe are the most six most important things that every child needs to grow up into adulthood knowing. And then for those who have graduated from part one, then probably in the winter, we'll do a part two that'll be the second six things. So you would have to go through part one before you go through part two.
Wisdom takes time.
Hmm?
Wisdom takes time.
Wisdom takes time for things that you have to take some time to get through something, you have to take some time to deal with something. Wisdom takes time. Wisdom is one of those things where you say, well, who has wisdom? Well, I'm 5-year-old. No, the 50-year-old has wisdom. Why? Because he's been through some things, he's had some time, he's evaluated and looked at. But in this micro inconvenience world that we live in, I want it now, I want it now, I want it now, I want it now.
Well, in keeping with what you're saying, now if wisdom takes time, and you said, who has wisdom? Well, the 50-year-old. By the time a man is 50 years old, so let's say that it takes 50 years to accumulate wisdom, where are his children by the time he's 50? They're gone. So what is his chance to have great influence in their formative years if he's 50 before he's acquired a lot of the experience and the wisdom that he needs? It's already gone. Now, in times past, men tended to live in multi-generational culture, and that was honored.
Grandpa lived at home.
Helped each other get help.
Well, even if grandpa didn't live at home, even if that they perhaps worked together, they socialized together, and there was honor for an older generation. That's not always true today. So I just thought, and just looking even at my own life, and realizing what are some of the messages that my parents did a great job with. What are some of the messages? And you don't even know it. Remember what we've said about the simple person. The simple person is the person who doesn't know that they don't know. So how can you know to go pursue the understandings that you don't know that you even need to know? And that's not supposed to sound funny, even though it might. Okay, now this was supposed to be the introduction to what we're going to look at, not supposed to be the main meal here. All right, so a little bit of review before we move on, and I'm just going to every week do the same basic review because I want this to be ingrained in us. The Proverbs talk about four types of people. The simple. Anybody want to offer us a definition of the simple? We've already given that. Somebody else? The simple are those people who don't know and don't know that they don't know. And therefore, they will wander into almost anything, and they don't understand that there is danger ahead. All right, so the simple is one type of person. The fool is another type. What's the fool? The fool believes that he knows, has enough information, and doesn't need the outside counsel of others. Well, then we understand what the wise is. And then what's the wicked? Because very often we look at the wicked and we can't... Well, let me roll this back a minute. I've said that we are all four. Remember that living with inside of us is all four. Not only are we not wise in all areas, but living inside of us is the wicked person as well as the wise, the foolish, and the simple. Now, given that and the fact that you probably don't think of yourself as wicked, what is our understanding of what a wicked person is?
It's not that you can't think of yourself as wicked. You don't want to be wicked. I don't want to be wicked. Too bad.
Well,
I don't want to be sinful. Too bad.
But what is wickedness?
You do it knowing it's
always trying to deceive others and trying to gain from deceiving others.
Okay, that's the practical outworking of that. In a more general sense, the wicked person is the person who knows enough to know that there will be consequences for other people as the result of his actions, but doesn't care. That's the distinction. I know that there will be fallout. Some of this fallout is going to come on to other people, but because I'm more interested in my personal gain than their benefit, I will act in this way anyway. Now, have we ever been that? The answer is yes. And therefore, we are the wicked. All right. The next thing that we looked at, cascading consequences. What does that mean? We said that all of our lives, we are producing what we'll call cascading consequences. What is that?
It keeps coming back.
One action produces a reaction. That reaction is, in fact, an action all of its own that starts another thing. And so, we harvest over the course of a lifetime the cascading effects of our actions, either good or bad. And therefore, at the end, and this is pretty powerful, at the end, if I sow some good, I start to harvest back good even beyond what I deserved. See, if you look at the life of a person who at the end of 50 or 60 years of living is extremely successful, it doesn't mean that they have done so much more than the person who is, by the world standards, a failure. It means that they have sowed a little, incrementally, at the right times, in the right places, and the cascading consequences mean that that becomes, that little sowed grows up to be a good, that good produces more good, that good produces more good. But what happens when I sow a little stupidity? That grows up and has a consequence all its own. And that thing has a consequence of its own. And. And so at the end of life, we don't look at people and say, wow, they must have done everything right. In fact, they may have just done a handful of things very well. And the cascading consequences of doing good have brought to them a harvest of good. And the person who ends up in, we'll call it unfortunate circumstances, they haven't necessarily done everything bad in life. They've just done a handful of things that cascaded out of control. And so at the end, it looks like they have lived a horrible life when in fact they may not have.
Could it be one poor decision?
It can be. It can be. And we're going to look at that in a moment. All right, we've said then that wisdom has three basic messages for us. Anybody remember them? You awake, Jason? You with us? Good. I'll try to get more interesting. Three basic messages. The first is, do these things. So obviously, if that's the first message, you can probably guess what the second message is. Don't do these other things. And the third message is, use caution here. There is opportunity, but the opportunity is also seeded with potential danger.
Yeah, it's the raspberry among the thorns.
And a lot more of life is what you just called the raspberry among the thorns than it is clear-cut, don't do this or do this. But wisdom has those three basic messages for us. All right, so now we move into the outline for today. And I started to reflect on where we've been so far, and I realized that we spend a lot of time talking about acquiring wisdom, and that we need to be wise, but how do you get wisdom?
You ask for it, and he'll pour it out for
you. You inherit it. I believe you inherit it.
Give me some of that.
When you're young, when you're old enough to take out trash and be responsible to clean up your room, I inherited wisdom from my grandfather. I didn't have a father in my life. So at 6 years old, I was taking out trash and working at school in the morning. And then, going to work, then going to school. So I personally believe that you inherit wisdom. And then you may not utilize it coming up, but there's going to be a time in your life that you're going to grab it. Like, me personally, 50 years old, I became a man. You know, I grew up.
Your answer is interesting, because what he's describing now is the person, he's simple, he's young. He doesn't know, and he doesn't know that he doesn't know. Okay, so let's all go back to the time that we were 8 years old, and we were given some task to do. And hopefully we were given some tasks to do. But he had someone in his life who could do that.
And still believe him.
Right.
And I didn't get it, you know, coming up as a young
man. Now, that's not the only source of wisdom, but I want to focus on that for a minute because it's important. Because at that time in his life, do you suppose that he considered taking out the trash as building wisdom into his life?
He never thought, oh, this is a great idea.
Of course not. Of course he didn't. No.
This sucks. You don't see the value of it. You don't connect.
No, there's absolutely no. But what happens, and I guess I'm talking to adults here. So as adults, we become responsible. We are the curators of our own lives, and therefore we are responsible for going out and seeking wisdom. Remember how we started this? None of us is wise in all areas, which means there are areas in which each of us needs additional wisdom. How do I go about getting? It's not enough to tell people, well, you need to be wise. Where do I find wisdom? That's a big question. And then, in light of what we're looking at here, how do I tell the difference between What one person calls wisdom, go live with this person for 10 years, find out if they're right, and then marry them, versus another person's wisdom. How do I, as the simple or the foolish person in this area of life, discern the difference between what we'll call wise wisdom and foolish wisdom? And don't minimize this challenge.
My old man said, okay, go ahead.
Okay. I wish I had gotten out the board, but I didn't. My bad. So we've said that freedom, the ability to act out, to choose, is a great gift, because without freedom, I really don't have the flexibility to choose. And without choice, then the greatest gift that God has given me is thwarted. So if I don't have freedom, I can't choose. If I can't choose, then the very endowment that makes me most unique and most human is undermined. And remember what we said last week, that it's only approximately 5% of all the people who have ever lived that have actually lived in a condition of freedom that allowed them to exercise choice with any degree of flexibility. Well, if choice is one of the ways, and choice and the ability to experience the consequences of my actions, if that's one of the ways in which we learn, right? I become wise because I first acted stupidly, and I critique my own stupid actions, and I become wise in that way. Are there any better ways?
Define where to do.
What's that?
Define where to do. So you define what you want in your life. Learn from someone who has what you're looking for, and just do what they've done.
Okay, so you introduce the last thing that we have to have, purpose. Purpose is essential before I can discern whether the wisdom that is being given to me is wise. So, if my purpose is to, let's say I genuinely feel that God has called me. Well, John was talking about an example before. He said this guy who went back to school for agriculture, and he just felt it was a weird thing to do, but he just followed that because he felt it was God's call in his life. Well, now, what does his family think? What do his friends think? What do the people that he has been around for all of his life think when he
married with a family at that time?
Okay, so he and a pastor, is that right? Okay. Okay, so all of his pastor friends. This sounds like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. All of his pastor friends come over one day and they say, "Rudolph, why are you going back to school right now? Why are you going back to school for agriculture? You're a pastor." Now, does that sound wise?
Not on the surface there.
It doesn't. And so until you understand something of your unique call and purpose, you cannot know if something's wise for you.
Hold on. Every farmer in the area went, "You're smart." Every farmer said, "You're smart." Pastors couldn't see it. Why? Well, because you're a pastor. How do you know he's a pastor? How do you know he didn't just make a choice to be a pastor a long time ago? When he thought, you know, I really like to be a farmer. But his dad was a pastor, his grandfather was a pastor, everybody didn't like the pastor. Just like the cops thing. My dad was a cop, my grandfather was a cop, I'm gonna be a cop. Well, I don't even like people. Well, maybe you ought to make a choice. You know what I mean? Like there's choices that are made, and we just think that that's what we want to do. We get caught up in a good point about like things. I had heard on the way over here about a guy who lived his life as an artist, his whole life, creatively as an artist. He was a creative person his whole life. He said he gave everything to it. And in the end, he said, "Well, I've given everything to it. Now I need purpose. Now I need a purpose." Now? You're 80 years old, and now you discover you need a purpose? Now you discover you need... It's too late. It's too late for you. What are you going to do now? You're in the desert of your life. This is something that you needed to decide years ago. Years ago, you needed to be decided. And there's too many people who don't make that list of, okay, who am I, what am I, what do I do, what am I about? They don't even know themselves, much less bring a mate in, create a few children who don't know themselves either.
And there is one of the other key things that we need to address when it comes to wisdom. We can have wisdom about finances, we can have wisdom about work, we can have wisdom about a lot of other things. Do we know ourselves?
Barely.
That's one of the key pieces of wisdom that each of us needs to have. Do I understand me? Do I understand me uniquely? In other words, I'm different from you. And not just because you have more hair than I do, but I mean, we think differently. We biologically we're different in the way that we're wired and what we're attracted to, what we're drawn to. Do I understand myself? How do I get to understand myself? Remember, it's not enough to say, go find yourself. Would somebody please show me the map that's going to help me to find myself? How do I do that?
It's called four steps.
So,
we'll finish that part, what you started about the guy.
Okay, so he goes, well, why don't you finish that, because you told the story.
I heard about him several years ago when a group of us pastors went to Haiti for like a day and a half. We showed a little video here at church. But they told us about this man named Dr. Durden. And that was the beginning of the story. And he went back to school, agriculture, and there was an anointing on him to do that. And he really developed soil research and nutrients and all that. And so in Haiti, we were at the big Convoy of Hope warehouse, brand new, humongous, and the trucks were coming in because in Haiti, they're able to grow their own rice now through Dr. Dirt, wonderful, beautiful rice. And the bags were coming in and filling up the warehouse. Now he's doing the same thing in Africa, helping the locals grow their own food. And so God is using this man and just multiplying. He was on the cruise. We were at Convoy of Hope, Alaska. This story is phenomenal. But it was just being open to hear from God. And he was open to hear from God, even though he didn't understand the full story, the end result. But that's how God's using him now. Instead of just feeding people can grow their food and feed themselves.
And in the earlier days, a missionary wasn't just to bring God, the gospel to the savages. It was to teach them how to farm, how to live, how to act right. It was to bring morals. It was to bring all of this stuff that they knew. Stop killing each other. You got tribe against tribe here. Hold on, whoa, stop. If we could just get some water to this part of the world, it would be different.
Mm-hmm.
Completely different.
Just said water. He's a guy in his early 40s probably.
But that takes wisdom to see that. If we just had water, it's the kingdom of heaven. We have all this stuff, but so what we don't have, water.
Mm-hmm.
And it transformed an entire...
Tom Lloyd Hope's doing that too, purified water, wells, all that.
One person shows up with real genuine wisdom, and it can transform a community.
Okay, so back to the question. Where do we get wisdom? Once I realize that I need more wisdom in a certain area of life, where do I go about getting wisdom? So there are guiding principles that God provides here. As a matter of fact, that one of the Proverbs says, let's just go over there. Let's turn. It's actually Proverbs 1, so it shouldn't be hard to find.
Say 1?
Yes. And I'll hope I can find it first, and then I'll tell you where to go.
My son, get instruction.
Yeah. Here we go. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. Now, when church-type people hear this, they assume that this is all there is then. But look at what it says. The fear of the Lord is the beginning. So let's say that puts a foundation under your life.
That's right.
But it doesn't build the entire structure. I need the foundation or the structure will be faulty and the structure will collapse. So I need the foundation. But what does this foundation provide to me? What does the fear of the Lord, and we know that means honor, respect, what does that look like lived out in daily living?
You can fear the Lord and run.
Yes, you can. So I'm asking, what does it look like? Yes.
You know what that looks like? This is what that looks like. Matter of fact, that's not what it looks like. That's what it is.
Whoa. Water makes up now.
Okay, let me go over to, it would be the back of your first paper, bottom. Wisdom is actually acquired in one of several ways. Is that at the bottom of your backside there?
On the first page?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got plenty of wisdom on my backside.
Okay, so personal experience is the first source of wisdom. I live, I do things, I observe the results of doing those things. What's the weakness in that? Where is wisdom acquired in that chain of events? I desire to do something, I do something, at the end of it I harvest a consequence, and so I evaluate the consequence.
Okay.
Where's the tricky part in that?
I'll give you a personal experience. I went down at 120 miles an hour, ruined my right knee. I still ride at 120 miles an hour. I still do that.
Okay.
Wisdom would say, stop doing that. Don't do that. Safety, your helmet, track, ambulances, emergency personnel. No. Whatever I feel like. Where is the wisdom in that? Like, here's, I'm giving you the negative aspect. Wisdom would say, right? Wisdom would say, don't do that anymore.
Okay, but there is another voice inside of you overriding wisdom at that point. Okay. So stop right there. Okay, I need to put you on ice for a minute. We'll bring you back out again. Where's the weak link in that? It's not enough to observe what's happened. I have to draw the right conclusions about what happened. So when I'm riding 120 miles an hour down the road, you just stay on ice, let me tell the story. When I'm riding 120 miles an hour down the road, it wasn't my fault that I spilled, it was the little pebble in the road. But next time, I'll be more careful about looking for pebbles.
Yeah, you're not going to see that now,
sure. Next time, it'll be different.
That's called addiction.
You said that it wasn't your fault.
No, no, I'm being the voice of deception here now, okay? I'm not being the voice of reason. Okay. Okay.
Yes, we do.
All right, so personal experience. It's extremely valuable, but it's extremely valuable only if I develop the skill of being able to interpret results correctly.
You just said it. I'll make a little correction. I was a drug addict. I said, I'll just make a little correction. I just won't use on this day. I just won't use this stuff. I just won't do this. I just won't do that.
Okay.
None of it.
Next thing, shared experience. So shared experience is all this body of human information that has been transmitted down to us. This, a lot of this, is shared experience. It is people observing what happens when they relate to God well, when they relate to God poorly. It is set down for us. It is shared experience. Now, we can acquire a lot of wisdom from shared experience. What's the downfall there? Where is the weakness in that?
Well, you and me, you said, are different. You and me are different. How
yes, we are.
Might not work for me.
We are different, and therefore what works for you may not work for me, but what is the self-deceiving lie that I tell myself about shared experience? What does every 16-year-old say when his parents say, don't do this, here's what's going to happen?
Well, that'll happen to him, not me.
Well, there you go. Couldn't have said it better myself. That's exactly what. I am somehow unique and different and can violate.
I'm special. Yeah, addicts do the same thing.
Okay, so wisdom comes from personal experience. Wisdom comes from shared experience. Wisdom comes from, I'm going to put a little one in here that's not there that we can say is sort of like a combination of the two. It's observation. It's observing what happens to other people without their knowing it. So I watch this person. I watch the results that they get. I watch these things in life. I watch what happens. And I start to draw conclusions from that. What's difficult about that?
What if you're not so smart?
Well, most of us aren't very diligent observers, first off. We're not. We're so busy living our own lives that we don't pause long enough to observe what's really happening.
But I think that's very important. You need to.
What color is the car?
Well, that's exactly it. How many things in life do we selectively ignore? And we have to. We mentally, we'd go crazy if we noticed everything. The question is, do we ever pause to notice things? Stop right there and answer this question for yourself. Why are you busy?
Are you busy because you make yourself busy, or are you busy because everybody else
is? No, in a general sense, why do we choose to be busy? I'll say it that way. Why do we choose to be busy?
Because you can't deal with yourself sitting still for 5 minutes.
Okay, it could be to block out whatever. What's another reason why we're busy?
Well, sometimes you think you're getting a lot accomplished.
It's a values assessment. I believe that there is more to be gained by going and doing this than I could ever gain by stopping and reflecting. Why do men feel that they have to work 7 days a week? Remember one of the things that we said last week, and that when we looked at the Ten Commandments as a declaration of freedom? That when God spoke to a nation of slaves and said, you can take a day off, that was revolutionary. That you don't have to work 7 days a week.
That you should. It's not good for you.
But that's all they knew how to do.
Right.
So he said, right. He's teaching them to be something else. Do something else.
Think about that. Why do we all assume that to be busy is of more value than to be silent and quiet and observing?
You're taught that. In our, you're taught that. At least you used to be taught that. I'm not so sure anymore. Get up, go to work.
Few people need to get busy.
Well, okay, yes, there are.
Most people, and you don't see the value. If I step back, I'll invest in myself and what I'm doing for the long run and be more effective. In accomplishing more in the long run.
Most people don't plan anymore either. They don't spend any time in the planning of the project. They just dive in, run over to Lowe's, spend more money than they need to, have more waste laying on the ground when they're done because they didn't actually draw out a little plan that says, hey, you know what, if I buy 12s instead of 8s, I'll have more wood.
Well, by the sense, you know, the plan.
My first
go to
war.
You're going to go to war. You're going to build. You're going to go to war. You're
my first
build. How many times have you seen a piece of property, a big sign out there, future home of whatever, and it's set there for a dozen years, grow weeds, nothing happens? That's not a good picture. And that could be in our life sometimes.
But my first sponsor told me, fail a plan fail. Yeah. Plan fail. Because you've not looked ahead. You've not looked far enough at it. You haven't even asked anyone's opinion.
Okay. Now you're fine. You've contributed well. You just need to step away from the ledge a minute. Okay, Revelation. Now, in light of what we've just talked about already about busyness, what's the likelihood that we're going to get any special revelation from God if we're so frantic and busy? Or could we hear it? Could I hear what God is saying if I never stop? So, do you hear what your coworkers, or your wife, or your friends are saying when you're busy doing other things? So if we don't hear what human beings are saying because we're busy doing other things, how could we suppose that we could hear God if we never take time to allow for revelation? So if I say that I want wisdom, but I never stop running, and running is figuratively for all those things that we do, if I say that I want wisdom to live more effectively, but I never stop, then I'll never acquire it.
The thought I just got of when you said that is the classic story of Jonah. Running, not hearing God, God speaking. So what happens to him? He's in the belly of a great fish. He hears God now. He set aside for a few days.
Jonah was a new man at one and two. He was a new man. I'll go. No, you won't. You are a liar. You deceiving yourself. In the water. I'll go. Nope.
Okay, and here's the final one. Imagination. Now, when I'm young, I can't have a great deal of imagination because imagination is the product of everything that's going into me and how I start to mix it together. Older people should have more imagination. Yeah, I mean, they really should. It's just that they start to block it out with a bunch of rules. Imagination...
Okay, I agree with you.
Imagination is the ability to project myself into situations and say, if I do this, what are the possible outcomes? So I don't have to live through a negative consequence. And all I need to do is project myself into it, evaluate what might happen next. How is chess played? Think about this. How is chess played?
30 moves ahead.
Well, if you're going to be good, it is, right? And you're anticipating, I move here, he does this, and it happens quickly. Right? Incidentally, I'm horrible at chess, so I just am. I don't know if that means I have no imagination or what, but that is exactly how chess is played. And chess masters are able to project into the future that they haven't yet moved to, and it's as real to them as if it had already taken place.
But there are a finite number of moves on the chessboard, so they just, it's mathematical. They think of every move that can be made on the board at this time. Boom, the next move gets made, they reevaluate. Every move is reevaluated 100 times over.
All right, I want to talk about two different kinds of wisdom now. We'll call it short-term wisdom. How do I prevent myself, and this has already been said this morning, but something in something I heard this week, it was an interview with somebody, and they were just talking about a friend of theirs that they knew that in a split second had made a rash decision that changed their life forever.
Yeah, there was talks about it.
Right? In a moment, I react instead of respond, and it changes the course of my life forever, and not in a good way. Now, who of us hasn't been there? How do I stop that from happening? See, because you and I want to think, here's what we want to think. We want to think that we are rational beings, that we are intelligent beings, and we make our decisions based on a body of evidence and what... In other words, we want to believe we're Spock. This is rational, therefore I will do it. What does human experience tell us about that?
Mine?
Do I always behave according to what's rational and logical?
Hold on. Most people don't even know what they're capable of. They've never been put in a situation to even test that. They don't even know what they're capable of.
Okay, let's take something. Have you ever had a discussion with someone? And we're going to look at that scripturally in a minute. Have you ever had a discussion with someone and the discussion starts to get heated?
No.
No?
Okay.
Now, at that moment, when it starts to get heated, what becomes the driving force? Rationality or emotion?
Emotion.
And at the moment that emotion takes over, what happens to rationality? It does, usually.
Yes, Your Honor.
And
right?
Now what becomes the new motive? The best outcome or for you to be right?
Or justify or whatever that thing is.
Okay, now we can take that. A heated discussion is something we've all had experience with. Now, here's another example. Do you suppose that every act of road rage is committed by a fool? I mean, a complete idiot who didn't know better? It's a man or a woman in a moment of weakness where their emotion overcomes their intellect and they act stupidly. Is any of us beyond that? Ever is any of us beyond that? No. What's the cure for that? If we want to be wise people, and I'm calling this behavioral wisdom, meaning it happens like that. It's a behavior. If we want to become wise behaviorally, are there any helps for us? Because this is a very important question.
Yeah, it's called behavioral modification.
How do I become behaviorally wise?
How did I do it?
I'm asking for, that's a question. If you have a suggestion.
I gave a whole host of people the ability to come up to me and go, what are you doing? That's absolutely ridiculous. You're stupid. I told them, look, I don't know how to think. I'm new at this. You guys told me that I could be returned to sanity and that I would understand God in some form. Help me to do that. Okay. You're giving me a permission. Authority has a word. to call you out when I think that you're acting irrational. Yes.
Okay. I believe there's only one thing that overcomes emotional impulse, and that's a stronger habit. Okay? Because habits become so ingrained in us that, and you're shaking your head. It is the best hope that we have, I believe. And so my suggestion to us all is, if we want to behave in the moment more wisely, we need to begin to practice in safe moments how to behave in that wise way. To go out of our way to train ourselves to behave wisely, to behave courteously, to behave, I don't know what other ways that we could behave wisely, to not act on impulse purchases, to do all these other things, in small and safe ways to gradually discipline ourselves and build up a body of habit that restrains us from doing rash things in the moment.
But so you're saying that inside of me exists this thing to be able to act responsibly, respectfully. Inside of me exists this thing that I can do by myself to modify my behavior.
It's called a dream.
If, wait. If, no, I'm not saying that. Well, let's be careful here.
When we add to the equation, when we come to Jesus Christ, He gives us a great helper, the Holy Spirit. If we will listen, like you listen to those people speaking. And He will even help us listen. And sometimes it is by failure we'll listen.
There is a host of people that need to be involved in your genuine.
And a multitude of counselors.
Want wisdom. Genuinely want wisdom. You're going to lay down your ideas and say, you know what? I don't have that. I don't have any of that.
Well,
if you want it, you'll get it.
We've said that there are various sources where wisdom comes from. We've already itemized them, but I am saying in the moment, there's no one around. We use the example of the person in the road rage. There's no one else in the car. There's no one at that moment can restrain you from doing the rash thing.
You're going to have some character.
Where does character come from?
Other people. Straight up, other people.
So are you saying that you believe that you are not the result of things that you do for yourself?
My father gave me character.
No, I think it's the whole picture, but yes, that is, there are the results of things we do for ourselves. Yes.
It is.
You may be saying the same things, but I might have come to it, like you said, with different people. I might have come to it in a far different way than you did. My old man gave me character in life here. Being tough, being strong, you know, cry, keep moving, you know what I mean? But I had to learn how to temper that with the character that I got from NA that says, whoa, a little bit of grace. Hold on, you make mistakes too.
Slow. Sure.
So there were a host of people that helped develop what you see here now.
But understand this, that you have built into your life habits that are preventing you from doing small, stupid things right now.
Exactly. Yeah.
And what you are exposing yourself to, where you are at the edge, is where you haven't yet built up strong enough character yet.
You're down here on this side, and I'm thinking more on this side. Like we just stepped into it.
No.
It just happened. What do you do?
Oh, yeah.
Your 6-year
overrides what you did then.
Right. Your 6-year-old has not developed strong character and habits to live out that as strong.
He's not going to call a friend and say, hey, should I do this?
And that's a practice.
Yeah, it is.
It is. Because there was a time in your life when you wouldn't have done that, and then that becomes almost second nature to you at the moment of weakness to do that. That is a habit that you build up.
My first sponsor said, you're allowed to go to the bathroom and choose what you want to eat. Other than that, you make a phone call.
Okay.
I can see my 5-year-old grandson, or his 7-year-old sister, watching with, no, I didn't.
I saw you do that.
No,
it wasn't me. It's the what is it? The that little 3-year-old with the white paint all over? I wasn't in the paint bucket.
Okay. If personal moment by moment things, what we'll call behavioral wisdom, is accomplished through developing habits, then how is directional wisdom? So I'm distinguishing between the two. Behavioral wisdom is what I do in the next moment. Directional wisdom is the track of my life and the choices that I make that will have long-reaching consequences for my life. So behavioral wisdom keeps me out of difficulties. directional wisdom takes me to the good purpose that God has for my life. Now, how do I acquire directional wisdom? And there's an overwhelming body of, we'll call it wisdom in the Proverbs, that seems to focus on one thing. The friends that I keep are going to define who I become. This is an amazing thing. The friends that I keep in a long range are going to have incredible influence over who I become. And therefore, if I want to structure my life early on in a way that is going to afford me the possibility to live out God's best purpose for my life, the one influencing factor that I have over that is who I choose to associate with and affiliate with on a regular basis. So how do I choose good friends? That's the question then. That's my part. If I want to acquire directional wisdom, friends are going to give me that. If I want to acquire those kinds of friends, what am I looking for in those friends? So if you were to make a list right now, what do you suppose? And I made a list there, but maybe you haven't seen it yet, so you'll think on your own. What are some of the things that you would be looking for in the kinds of people that you would want to surround yourself with if you wanted to fulfill your life's call? Make sure what?
They have results and what you're trying to accomplish.
Okay, so you're saying that I want to surround myself at least partly. I want to have some people that I know that have already accomplished some of what I want to accomplish. Because they're going to understand how to get there. Right, what else?
Something that goes on with that umbrella is like, I know for people who are truly happy, like in hard times or good times, whatever, they're just happy to be, like true happiness. You can see it in their eyes.
And so surrounding yourself or at least being in the company of people who have the qualities that you want, that you aspire toward, that you want to emulate. So we'd say people have a great attitude in general. You've described one quality of a great attitude. So people who have a great attitude is one thing that I want to surround myself with. And incidentally, do the Proverbs have anything to say about surrounding yourself with people that have bad attitudes? Yes, they have plenty to say about that. As a matter of fact, one of the pieces of counsel that the Proverbs have is don't ever become the companion of short-tempered people. Now, of all the kinds of people that you could not associate with, why pick that kind? Don't ever become the companion of short-tempered people. Remember what we talked about cascading consequences? Okay, so we're going to have two different people. One gets hit by the train. Whose fault is that? It's his fault. It's his fault because he chose to drive over the railroad tracks. The other person gets shot in the ghetto. How does a person get shot in the ghetto?
They're walking down the street. Wrong place, wrong place.
Because he placed himself there because that was his peer circle.
Right.
I don't know how this happened to me. It's not my fault. Well, who were you with at the time? The people that you choose to associate with are going to have far-reaching consequences for your life. Okay, so people, number one, who have some understanding about what you aspire to, they've already done what you want. The next group was people who have a good attitude, an attitude that's like you want. What else? Is that enough? Remember, we're human beings who have imagination. If you want to acquire wisdom, you need to imagine what it would be. What would be the necessary steps? And this is not scriptural. God has given us minds to think through this. What's another thing that you want?
It goes under the attitude. You want someone who's going to encourage you. Because you don't want someone who's going to like say, get out of debt.
Okay, so you want people who are very inspirational. A couple of other qualities that you want in people. Okay, when the Proverbs say that the wounds of a friend are faithful, what does that mean? How can the wounds of a friend be faithful if the friend never has the courage to speak up and confront you? That means that you need to surround yourself with people who are courageous. The easiest thing that I can do when I see something in another person that I believe could use some help, the easiest thing to do is to be quiet. Who wants a confrontation? I personally, believe it or not, I'm not naturally confrontational. I don't like confrontation. I would rather avoid confrontation. And therefore, if someone that I genuinely like is doing something that I see as destructive, but I know it's going to lead to friction, if I express, well, I was searching for a meaningful word.
I'm smiling because I'm thinking, my wife is very good at this.
At what?
What we're talking about, confronting people, speaking the truth in love, because she cares and she doesn't, and it's received. There's been people that haven't received it. They don't want to receive it, but I know her motivation. And she's not throwing herself at people, but they come into their lives. Okay, so you're asking me, she's very good at that. Very good.
So if no one in your life is ever at least calling you to think about your actions, then you need to add somebody to your inner circle. And there's that whole gamut of people that we come in contact with that we can't help but come in contact with. I can't help but come in contact with people at church, at the gym, at work, whatever. But there's the people that I choose to be in regular contact with, and that's the kind of people that we're talking about. So when most of us think about friends, we think about a group of buds who go out and they just do fun things together or what. That's not it at all. To become a wise and effective, purpose-oriented person means that I am going to choose to surround myself with people who, again, number one, your first one? Okay, they have achieved some of the results. They have the attitudes that I want. They have my interest at heart. And because they have my interest at heart, they are willing to confront me when I go outside of the boundaries that I've set for myself. Here's another one I put here, intellectual and experiential diversity. One of the tendencies that we have is to surround ourselves with people that are just like ourselves, who think like we do, who talk like we do. Have you ever had a conversation with someone whom you disagreed with, but yet in the end you were glad you had the conversation, not confrontation, because you had a broader view of life?
Yeah.
All right. Here's another one. Those who have a great deal of respect for other people. People outside the group that you're in. I don't want to be in the presence of people long-term who basically don't have respect for people in general. I can disagree with somebody strongly and still respect them. Because that attitude is going to rub off on me. That attitude of general disrespect and disregard for other human beings who don't think like I do is sooner or later going to rub off on me, and it's going to have some tarnishing effects on my future. Anybody else want to add anything to the list? I put here humility, which allows them to listen. Those who are seeking to learn.
Yeah, just those who are continually moving, who admit they don't know it all, or trying to move forward all the time, no matter what they did, no matter how wise they are.
Sure.
You can be scared of your future at the top, like Solomon, who had it all. You know, that was a downfall because he thought he had everything, and he just fell into hard times.
Think about this. Maybe you've never experienced this, but maybe you have. Two different types of people we have conversations with. When you pose a question to one category of people, they already have an answer. No matter what it is, you say, I wonder if, or I wonder about, and you're in that moment attempting to explore a new idea. But they already have the answer to what you're trying to explore. Now at times that's useful. Right? Should I walk across the street? Yes or no? Well, there's a bus coming. No, I would not walk across. That's useful information. But if that person knows the answer to everything, what happens to the possibility for future exploration? What happens to the possibility for greater understanding? If you surround yourself with people who always have an answer, then no future exploration can be done. But if in deep things you surround yourself with people who themselves are saying, that's a really great question, and I don't have a full answer to it, I wonder if we could find some answers together, then you've surrounded yourself with pursuers, not people who have arrived. And that's important. People who have arrived already have an answer to every question that you will ever have.
God's up here. Some people get to like halfway or whatever. You know, they get a little bit of wisdom. They think they got it all. That's as far as you can rise if you hang with them. But if you hang with people who are always looking to keep moving on, you'll move up with them. And admitting you don't know it all and searching for the best answer in every situation.
And you know what I've found? People who are, since you put it like that, people who are at the bottom, okay, and I'm not placing them there, but since you did, I'll go along with that example. People who are at the bottom tend to make you feel dumb when you're less than they are. Really, because they found one area where they know a little bit more and they tend to hold you down. People who are way up here tend to make you feel smart even in the process of not knowing everything. So you can sort of get a good gauge on where people are by how you feel in their presence. Do I feel stupid when I'm around them, or do I feel delighted to learn and free to explore, free to admit what I don't know? Do I have to hide what I don't know, or am I free to open up about what I don't know?
When you say people at the bottom,
no, I'm okay.
No, he said that. That's what I just want to ask.
No.
According to his... people who think they know it all, they kind of stop and they think they have all the wisdom in the world.
They're not continuing to grow.
We're always learning. Right.
I think that's what you're saying.
Right? Yeah.
You should be always learning.
I believe God, if you truly believe in God and Christ, you'll understand if you don't know it all, you never will. And God will challenge you your whole life to make you bigger and better every day.
Yep. Lifelong learners.
All right, let's turn over to 2 Timothy. And I realize this is kind of a disjointed discussion here this morning, but...
I wouldn't say who, yet it would work. It's okay, it's a good discussion. 2 Timothy what?
We are... Chapter 2, 20th verse. Now in a great house there are not only vessels of gold and silver, but also of wood and clay, some for honorable use, some for dishonorable. And therefore if anyone cleanses himself of what is dishonorable, he will be a vessel for honorable use, set apart as holy and useful to the master of the house, ready for every good work. It's an analogy. And in this analogy, he's saying that there is a master to a house who has a variety of vessels. Well, he's implying that God is the master of the house and that each of us is a vessel. And here's the question. What do you aspire to? What kind of vessel do you want to be? So let's take some vessels in the house and we'll imagine a house, we'll say, a house in an era when plumbing indoors did not exist. So there were various types of vessels. What kind of vessel would you want to be?
Well, I don't want to be a chamber pot.
Well, there you go. What kind of vessels do we want to be? And he says, the kind of vessel that you aspire to. Now, this is interesting because when I'm a vessel, it seems as if I don't have any choice. And he's saying what I am, right? So if we read it that way, we say, oh, I'm stuck where I am. Now in a great house there are not only vessels of gold and silver, but also of wood and clay. But the big distinction is not what I'm made of so much, because I might not be able to change that. But what kind of use do I want to have? Some are destined for honorable use and some for dishonorable. Therefore, if anyone cleanses himself from what is dishonorable, he will be a vessel for honorable use. Now, in that sense, the vessel gets some say in what it will ultimately be used for. It's not a guarantee that if you make yourself a usable vessel, you'll get to do that. Instead, what it is a guarantee that if you make yourself a usable and clean vessel, that you'll acquire a noble purpose. That the master of the house is not going to waste a good vessel on an ignoble purpose. So how do I do that? And here's what he says. So flee youthful passions and pursue righteousness. Now, fleeing youthful passions, I think, is that whole behavioral wisdom. How do I avoid, if you think of the word passion, what do you think of?
Desire
that's almost overriding logic and reason.
This impulsiveness.
Do you remember what we said a couple of weeks ago? We said that it is not just that people want bad things. It's that sometimes people want things badly. And what we said by that is that even a good desire, if it overcomes and consumes us, can start to be a bad desire. And it's not that the desire was bad. It's that the way that we allowed the desire to control us started to turn us bad. So it's not just don't only want bad things, but make sure that we don't want good things badly. And there's where passion comes in. When I allow my desire to just consume and override my logic. So flee youthful passions and pursue. And here's where we get into this habit that I said. If we acquire certain habits, it will help to instill on us behavioral wisdom. So pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace along with those who call on the name of the Lord from a pure heart. Well, and how would I do that? It's not enough to look at this command. How do I do that? If you were sitting alone with yourself and you were having a word study in this book with God at a moment, how are you going to answer that question? How do I pursue righteousness? Does anything come to mind?
Reflect back on the things that you did in the past. You know, whether it was 10 years ago, 5 years ago, 2 weeks ago, and try to better yourself and pursue righteousness.
So if I had just read this, it was, I don't know, 6 o'clock in the morning, and I read this, and I was going to walk out the door at 6:30, pursue righteousness, and I set that as a reminder for myself for the day. Then in every opportunity that as I move throughout my day, I have a choice. Now I'm going to have to define righteousness. What does righteousness look like? And I'm going to have to answer that question with God personally. This is what a proper behavior would look like. And undoubtedly, you're going to start to run in your mind through the day, through the common experiences of your day. What would a righteous behavior look like in this circumstance, in this circumstance, in this circumstance? And you're going to do a dress rehearsal for your day. Now, despite the fact that Jim and I might have disagreed a little bit about this, I believe this is the way in which we build habits that protect ourselves behaviorally.
Yep.
Pursue habits of faith and love and peace, along with those who call on the Lord from a pure heart. Have nothing to do with foolish and ignorant controversies. You know that they breed quarrels. That's an interesting comment. So there's Paul. He's writing to Timothy. Why does he say to Timothy, you know that they produce quarrels?
Well, he's been there before himself.
Because they both probably experienced that themselves. In other words, right now what you are seeing as you read these words is Paul and Timothy together of one mind saying, oh, we've been down that road before. We've had the personal experience of having gone too far into a needless controversy and having it blow up on us. And what happens at that moment? You know that they breed quarrels, and the Lord's servants must not be quarrelsome but kind to everyone. What is your effect if and these are to be God's representatives, what is your effect as a representative of God if you have quarrels with people that blow up? Well then, if you're trying to win people to Christ, you're not going to be effective in that. Be able to teach patiently, enduring evil, correcting his opponents with gentleness, so that God may perhaps grant them repentance leading to a knowledge of the truth. And they may come to their senses and escape the snare of the devil after being captured by him to do his will. Go surround yourself with some good people today. Okay, so as I move through my day, and he says, how are the people under my influence most likely going to be led to consider their behavior differently?
By your example, being patient and not blowing up.
Okay. And that is even going to spill over into the good relationships that we have. So I say I've chosen to surround myself with people who are going to build into me the best, which means I'm going to surround myself in part with people who disagree with me. The likelihood of having heated discussions with people that I disagree with is great. So there's a great amount of skill required to be able to listen to those who disagree with me and yet be calm about it. All right, let's go on to another purpose verse. I learned something interesting last night. I learned that there is no Matthew 18:11 in some Bibles. I learned that certain translations don't have a Matthew 18:11, while others do. So we're going to go first to Luke 19:10. All right, so Luke 19 tells the story of Zacchaeus, Jesus going through town, sees Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus is interested in him. They go to Zacchaeus' house. And the summary statement of this, here's Jesus, today salvation has come to this house since he is also a son of Abraham. And then Jesus says this about himself, for the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost. What a profound summary statement for someone's life. So in one way or another, now, we're not Jesus, so we're not going to be doing the saving of people. But here's an interesting wisdom question. As you move through your daily life, what are the areas in that territory that you have influence over where there is redemption needed, where there is redeeming needed, where there is restoring needed? So if Jesus' mission, he says, is to seek and to save what was lost, the question that we have to ask, which is purpose behind living wisely, is what needs redeeming in my life, my territory, the area that I have influence over? What is lost and needs to be found? What is broken and needs to be fixed? What is not whole and needs to be restored? Because this is a pretty profound, by itself, a pretty profound life mission statement. To go through life and to seek and to save what is lost. To go through life and placed into context of our own lives, to go through life and seek to bring restoration and wholeness to those things in our area of influence that are broken or in disrepair. And now we can see why wisdom has... You lose your ability to do that if you get embroiled in behavioral missteps. If I'm forever trying to fix the results of my momentary missteps, then I'm distracted. In other words, all of my life's mission is to fix my own life. I am the whole thing that needs to be fixed and restored all the time. If I'm always fixing and restoring my own life, then I don't have any time or any energy left to expend on bringing wholeness and restoration to the other things in that are surrounding me that need attention. I mean, I know it's bizarre to think about this, but what if Jesus was a drug addict and had to spend his whole life trying to take care of himself? See, wisdom liberates us to be able to do the good work that God calls us to do.